Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm reporting live from Cantalomba, as I'm sure you can likely hear, because we've got quite a lot of noise in the background, but Joy's going to go help us out with that and see if she can get the kids to be a bit more quiet. But I'm joined by Teresa. Welcome, Teresa.
Good afternoon, everyone out there.
So, as you've likely heard, if you're following along with the blogs, or if you've been reading the news that we've been sending from Cantalomba, Teresa's been taking pictures for a number of months now, and we've been talking about it on the Good News Updates and such, that the big focus of this trip is the girls' program. And so it seemed appropriate to focus this Good News Update live from Cantalomba on the girls' program. So I'll start by asking you, Teresa, kind of why we decided to go in that direction. What would you say is so important about having a girls' program as part of Living Compassion in Cantalomba?
As part of Living Compassion here in Cantalomba, it's very important to have a girls' program. We looked back at our girls in the community because they are falling prey every year, dropping out of school. Mm-hmm. So that's when we came up with this idea that we form a girls' program so that they stay in school. Mm-hmm. Back then we had a group which we called the Stay in School. They are the girls that we started with, and more girls are joining in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so you mentioned that they're very vulnerable to dropping out. There are a number of challenges that they face, young girls in Cantalomba face.
Yes, there are a number of challenges that they are facing, Jen. They are exposed to all sorts of biases, like the bars that are here in Cantalomba, mm-hmm. the boys that are here, and the financial challenges, of course. Mm-hmm. And you'd find that a girl as young as 13 maybe is pregnant, a girl as young as 14 years old is married off. Such vices.
Yeah. So it's very common for, as you say, for girls to be married off at a very young age, for a lot of their friends to be pregnant. And so when we first started talking about this, I remember that part of your vision was to give support to the girls, to have role models for them to understand if they want to stay in school, if they do, if that's a dream that they have, that we would provide the support for that. So it seems like that's been one of the main components of the program, is to really provide extra academic support and also encouragement for them.
Yes, Jen. We are trying to encourage these girls to stay in school so that they have a better life in the future. Mm-hmm. In fact, the group that we have right now will be our role model, yes, for the other upcoming children that are out there in Cantalomba, because we have a huge number of girls out there,
yeah,
who want to come and join the program but are not really there.
Yeah.
And I think we will make it.
Yeah, that is such a good point. And one of the things that I have been so, has been so impactful for me on this particular trip, is to see that all of the hard work the team has been doing over many years is really paying off. And that there are girls now, for example, we have four grade 11 girls, and I am so impressed by how well they are doing, and that exactly as you say, that they are going to be examples for their whole community, for all the girls who come after them, and that right now there are not very many grade 11 girls who are where these girls are today. But as these girls succeed and are supported to finish grade 12, to go on to have further education, to then have good jobs, to be able to support their families, they're going to be role models for all the girls yet to come.
Indeed, Jen, and I'm depending on these four girls. They impress me, Jen, because they are role models to the team out there. And I think in the near future, I'm proud to say that maybe I will stand and say these are my role models, because amongst these four girls, we have three nurses and one is a journalist.
Yeah. Let's go meet them, shall we?
Definitely.
All right, so we've just walked into the big classroom where we found Sri Devi, and Sylvia and Miriam working on an article that they are writing. And I'm going to let Miriam and Sylvia introduce themselves, and they're going to tell you what grade they're in and how old they are, and then I'll ask them a question about the program. So could you introduce yourself?
I'm Miriam. I'm in grade 11 at Rubuto Secondary.
How old are you?
I'm 18.
18 years old. And how about you?
I'm Sylvia Chingando. I'm a 11th pupil at the Millennium Secondary School. I'm 16 years.
Excellent. Thank you. So both of you are in grade 11, and you are part of the Living Compassion Girls Program. Is that right?
Yes.
And what have you, why is the Living Compassion Girls Program important to you?
They are important to us so that we will be educated and get good morals.
To be educated and to also get good morals.
Yes. And to get a good... To get a better life.
To have a better life. And what would you say, Miriam?
Even me is to become educated, to be educated, and to get good jobs, good morals, and better life.
So good job, good morals, and better and a better life. And Miriam, when you finish your education, do you have an idea of what you would like to do? What kind of job you would like to have?
Yes. I want to become a nurse.
You want to become a nurse. And we have our eye on Miriam to be a nurse at Living Compassion.
Yes.
And how about you, Sylvia?
I want to become a journalist.
Yeah. In fact, she's sitting with Sri Devi right now, learning to write an article. And so, Sri Devi, if I can ask you, who has been here, I think this is her third trip with us, maybe you could just say a little bit about what you've noticed in terms of the progression of the girls over those last 3 years.
Yes. I think the thing that has struck me the most is the girls, what it feels like is the girls are so much more confident, coming out, engaging in conversation. I think, you know, they used to say hi, hello, maybe one or two would come and have a conversation, but this trip it's felt 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 girls all want to talk to you, they want to go on a walk with you, they want you to play with them, to dance with them, to sing with them, and to see these girls really have such fun and joy, and to be here, which I project feeling taken care of, feeling taken, loved, and see the way that they are blossoming and showing up as a result of that love and kindness is really spectacular.
Yeah, that's it strikes me so much too, how easily we can have conversations and how much we have learned from all of you. I'm looking at the girls. And from Teresa and the whole team, we've been spending the last, 4 days, the better part of every day, sitting with the team, with the staff, looking at what are the components of the girls' program that we want to put in place. And when we finish that process, next week we're going to begin to talk with the girls and to really put some of those components in place. So it's a really exciting adventure for all of us. So thanks for that, Sri Devi. And I also have Beth here, who is with us on the trip as well. And it's her first time in Cantalomba, so that's always kind of a fun perspective. So I wonder, Beth, as we're talking about the girls' program and your experiences of being here and being with the girls, if you have anything you wanted to add to that.
Yes, it's just been the most marvelous adventure. I would just say that drop all expectations coming here, because you're going to be wowed. You're going to be just amazed at what these girls are doing, showing physics calculations and math calculations and reading and spelling, and their excitement adds to my excitement.
Yeah. Oh, that is so true. It's just, it's astounding, isn't it, when you see what they're up against.
Yes.
And what they're able to do in the face of that, what they're willing to do, what they want to do. It's so inspiring.
Yeah. It's really a sense of showing up.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
show up, and
yeah.
it's magic.
Yeah. And, you know, as you say that, Beth, I just see how key the participation is, because being here, as you say, there's nothing like it to have that re-inspiration of, oh, my gosh, I'll go home and do anything to support this project.
Yeah. Exactly. It's yeah. been a wonderful gift.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank all of you. And then we have a short little surprise for the end. So, Michael, with that beautiful goodbye song from the team, which translates as bye-bye living compassion, and something along the lines of a loose translation would be, we'll be together next when God intends. And I apologize, we've gone a bit over time, Michael, but it's always so special to be able to report live from Cantalomba, and we'll turn it over to you and Sherry. Hope everything is going well back in the United States. And
great.
As always, deep, deep gratitude to the entire Sangha for all that everyone does to make this inspiring transformation happen. Deep Gassho.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jen. And good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael. How fun was that?
That was very, very, very fun. Wonderful.
You know, up until very, very recently, when we were there, we would just spend a tremendous amount of energy on people. You have to speak English. And for people who don't know, that can seem a little heavy-handed. You know, we're Americans, and we go over there, and we want these people to speak our language, but it's the language of commerce in their country. And so there's just,
yeah.
there is no future for any of them if they don't speak English. And we just couldn't get them to do it. The teachers wouldn't do it. You know, we struggled getting Teresa to do it. And now, as Jen points out, you know, I mean, they're just talking up a storm in English. And excited about it, seeing a possibility for their future that just did not exist such a very short time ago. I mean, we're talking, you know, 3 or 4 years. So
wow,
it's amazing.
Wow.
Yeah, because these girls are in grade 11. So we heard one is 16 and one is 18. So they're right 4 years ago. 3 years ago, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, when we started really having this focus on how do we offer something to these girls so that they don't just wind up pregnant and just in the same bad situation. As one young man said early on, you know, we'll get married young and have children and watch them starve to death as we're starving to death. And so... it's just, it's a tremendous, tremendous change and such a triumph. So,
yeah, it's wonderful. It's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
What you said reminds me of the kindness of practice, which reminds me over and over again, you know, speaking English is important. And, you know, in our practice, we talk about, you know, you need to drop that story. And, Michael, you need to drop that story. And just the kindness of the persistence of what's important. It's just wonderful.
Yes, because we can see what's possible for someone, right? We see it for ourselves in practice and for one another in practice, and we can see it for these children now growing to be young men and women, we can see what the difference will be for them, for their lives, and we're just not going to give up. You know, we're just not going to quit and say, oh, well, they don't really want to do that. You know, it's kind of like our own kids. It doesn't matter if you don't want to do it. That's not the point. The point is you have to do this, because years from now you're going to see how important it was that somebody took a stand for you when you just, you know, you weren't able to take a stand for yourself because you just didn't have the information, didn't know how it worked, or that you were in fact going to get older, or that you would change with time, or any of those kinds of things, right? So it's really, it's a great process. And of course, it's so thrilling to see what Teresa has done in that place. And as she indicated, it's a mecca for hundreds, thousands of people that have a dream of being able to work with the cooperative and being able to have their children be in this program. These are people who a very short time ago would have said, I don't care if my kid goes to school. You know, what's the point of going to school? Is that going to mean anything? And now, you know, people are lined up to ask if these kids can be in the program. So as big as we can make this program, we have people who are ready to have their lives transformed. So makes a person want to keep going.
That's great. That's very wonderful.
Yeah.
And I will add that the blogs have been really great, and you get a lot more detail in there to expand upon what Jen and Teresa were sharing. So it's good.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Michael.
Sure. And I have some announcements here.
Oh, good.
Are you looking for a chance to get away from it all and deepen conscious, compassionate awareness in a beautiful and peaceful environment? If so, the practice weekend, February 26th through 28th at the Zen Monastery Peace Center in Murphy's, California, is perfect for you. The weekend includes guidance, group, and a practice activity.
And, of course, we can guarantee nothing, but I got to tell you, I wish everybody in the world should be here right now. It is so just achingly beautiful. Temperatures in the low 70s, blue skies. Everything is so lush and green from the rain that we've been blessed with. Oh, my goodness gracious. So I hope at the next practice weekend we can get something close to that.
Yes, great. And coming up in April 20th through 27th, the Your Practice Retreat is also a chance to step away from the pressures of day-to-day living and immerse yourself in a monastic community completely focused on waking up. The retreat is constructed around working and sitting meditation, recording and listening practice, and individualized support with what you choose as your practice focus for your stay.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And East Coast Sangha will want to mark their calendars for the Jataka Tales Retreat. That's May 2nd through 7th in North Carolina.
Yeah.
The Jataka Tales. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
The Jataka Tales are ancient wisdom stories that follow the many incarnations of the Buddha and will assist in the exploration of the six perfections, which are generosity, tolerance, wisdom, discipline, perseverance, and contemplation.
Mm-hmm. All good things.
Lovely. All good things. And another East Coast retreat has been changed. The retreat in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, September 1 through 6, is now the Hero's Journey.
Mm-hmm.
And registration for this retreat will open later in the year.
We had so much fun at New Year's that we had to do it again.
Yes, And a reminder that we are on bamboozle number one, which is distraction, and we are currently working on the assignment for week three. And for these and all other opportunities, visit schedule.livingcompassion.org. And if you'd like to talk with Sherry today, you can make a show by pressing star 6 and then 1. One topic, please, and about 5 minutes works really well. So here we go, Sherry.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome. First caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. It's Janice from Vancouver.
Well, hello. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing okay, and I'm sorry I couldn't make it to Seattle.
I know. I looked for you, and it was immediately apparent that you weren't there.
And I had a ticket, but my the situation with the rides just didn't work out. So, Yep. So that's the way it is. So I wasn't bamboozled.
Oh, good, good, good. Right, it was a ride, not a bamboozle. This is good, isn't it?
That's good. Yeah. So I'm excited to look at something that ego's not very happy about this, but just looking at better ideas. And the kind of around the content right now is that because I'm an advocate and a caregiver for somebody, when I think that I can offer some suggestions, I can see for myself that maybe they would be helpful. But if the person isn't able, energy-wise, to kind of hear some of them, then I don't need to push the agenda. But then there's this part where, I think it's being helpful, but I can see that, it's like with everybody, everybody's adequate to their own life. And I'm kind of a bit fuzzy when it actually starts to happen, where it is helpful because you're having to be the advocate, and where it is not helpful at all. But that's what I'm kind of looking at.
Let me ask you this, Janice. When you're with these situations, is it with the patient or is it with the caregiver, the other, maybe the professionals in the situation? Who are you?
Yeah, okay, so it's not with the other caregivers. It's maybe with the patient, and it's maybe sometimes around there can be a few things that are unhelpful from other family members.
I see. Yes. So, I'm right there with you. So how do you do your best to be a responsible advocate and find that line where to go over it would be perhaps you'd step over that line and onto somebody's toes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's.
And
yeah.
Are you aware of this for you on an energy basis? In other words, can you tell when your energy goes from a I have this suggestion to, I need for you to do what I'm saying. Do you have a sense of the movement along that continuum?
Maybe how I'm going to answer is that what happens is that the irritation starts to arise within me, and then there's mm-hmm. this kind of defensiveness. And then there's almost like, to heck with it. I'm not going to bother. So I know something's going on when that happens.
Yes.
But I don't always get it before, because I can see like there was something recently that came up, and actually it's just taking the person who's the patient a long time to kind of get there and sample these other little ideas to try. And it takes a lot of energy to kind of just be patient until the other person is ready, if ever they're ready.
Yes. Yes. And that's kind of one of the hard places in life, right? It is to not make it about me, right? Because, and to bring it back to, well, what is really going on with me? So I really want you to look at X, or I need you to do Y, or I think it would be really important and helpful if you would consider, and I can get so focused on the content of that that I fail to explore what my motivation is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, of course, it's easy to project that in many, many cases, the motivation is going to be fear.
Yeah. And I'm almost thinking that also maybe, yeah, fear, and almost like I'm feeling drained at times. So it's like, yeah, not thinking I'll be adequate. And so these are some steps which will help me as well.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And then it gets fuzzy, doesn't it? So
it's fuzzy,
is this about the patient, or is this about me?
Yeah, when I really look, I see that some of it is about me.
Mm-hmm.
Me trying
Which
to take
okay.
care of myself. Yeah.
Right, that's okay. Karmic conditioning would like us to believe that the way to take care of a loved one is to sacrifice ourselves. But that's not true. And as we know, through paying attention, as soon as we start sacrificing ourselves, we're not any good for anybody, right? Because that quickly grows into, stories and conversation and resentment and, as you say, defensiveness, and then we're just down a karmically conditioned track that's not going to do anybody any good.
Yeah.
So it might be helpful, just as a place to look, when you start seeing the first signs of the kind of tense or tight or irritable or is that the word you used, irritable?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. That when that begins to, when you first catch on to that, so not, I mean, again, karmic conditioning would like us not to notice any of this, and then we'll be informed about it with a spin on it afterwards, right? Well, you did this and you were that way and people thought that and you acted like that and you all of those sorts of things. But if you bring attention to what I'm going to watch for in every situation today is when those sensations of irritation or impatience or whatever that is begin to start up. And then I'm going to bring attention to those and stop right there. Stop right there and just be with those sensations and what's going on. You know, what's the conversation in my head? What am I being told this means? What do I have to do? You know, because those sensations are what will usually push us into urgency and a little, you know, the tension and the tightness get bigger and more powerful, and then pretty soon we're saying things we wish we hadn't said and acting in ways that we would rather not and that sort of thing. So to bring attention to that point in every interaction and see what you see about how you're being controlled and set up.
Well, that's great. So coming right back to the body sensations.
Yes. Yeah. Mm. And let those signal you that, oops, I'm coming up to the line.
Yeah.
So I really want to pay attention here. And of course, as always, not to let conditioning make it a contest. You know, it's not a if you do it right, then blah, blah, and if you don't, then no. We're doing awareness practice. And we do awareness practice even when our life circumstances are, really dicey, really difficult, painful, scary. We're still doing awareness practice.
Mm-hmm.
Because karmic conditioning would like to say, well, but, you can't dink around with that sort of thing. I mean, lives are at stake here. We still want to bring as much conscious, compassionate awareness as we can to every situation, every interaction for ourselves and for everybody around us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Rules don't change just because circumstances do, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and within all of this, I have to say that there's this incredible experience of joy, and that when I don't have a lot of energy, I'm actually, I have a lot more clarity sometimes just to what is really important and kind of cut through the rest of the nonsense. So conditioning hasn't got a hold of me too badly.
Oh, that's a great point. So when you start feeling that, getting a little worn down here, then that's the time to look at those sensations. And what you realized is, all right, I need to see what I can jettison. What am I doing that is not essential? Because we're down to the essentials here. And then when you feel more rested and have more strength, you can maybe add in some non-essentials if you want to. Or maybe this is a time of essentials.
Mm-hmm.
Really, all we focus on. Yeah?
Yeah.
And again, there's broad application. So in my little life, I just started an email class today. And so what I do is look around at all of the things that would be a priority in my life that just aren't now. Maybe in a couple of weeks when I get the hang of this and I sense that it's manageable and I can do it, then I'll bring in some of these other things. But not now, because I don't have the time, the energy, the focus, the strength, the anything to worry about, the condition of my closet. Dishes can sit in the sink all day long. It's okay. Yeah, because this other thing is more important right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Thanks so much, Sherry.
Yeah,
thanks.
You're so welcome. Take good care of yourself. I know you will, but I want to say it anyway.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks,
good
Michael,
night.
Too. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Janice. Sherry, I love that conversation, especially that part at the end about priorities. It's really, really valuable.
Yeah. Conditioning wants a one size fits all. So this is what's important, and you always have to be focused on that no matter what. Well, no.
Right.
Life changes, and we get to change with it.
Yes, exactly. And we have another caller here, Sherry.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. This is Janice from North Carolina.
Well, hello, Janice. How are you doing?
I'm good. I thought I'd get on because last time I got on, right after Janice.
Oh, I see. Wow, that's amazing, isn't it?
It is amazing, yes.
That's fun, yeah. So what's going on?
Well, what is going on? I just put myself in the queue, like I always do, and I don't really have anything prepared here.
Good. Then you can just tell us what's going on in life and practice.
Okay. Well, let's see. What's going on in life and practice is, what's going on in practice is I'm continuing to look at, it's basically the same process that I might have, that, I mean, that I, like, I don't know, like 10 years ago at the There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat. I was actually listening to the recording recently, and the process that I would be looking at now is exactly what I laid out then. It's just, I mean, it's, but something I saw recently, which is kind of amazing, is that, so I've always looked at this process of doing how I do things, like, it started out as success and failure, like, just working as hard as I could and, you know, trying to meet ego standards and whether, you know, everything was about succeeding and failing. And, you know, through the years, it's, that's not really a big trigger for me, success and failure. It kind of morphed more into other things. But part of the process, if I were to lay it out, I thought that I had this process and then this other process. And this other process hasn't really come up for me in years, it didn't seem like, or it just never really has caught my attention until lately. It's just all over the place. And it's basically, it starts with a perceived injustice or a permanent loss of something, and it triggers this, if it's a perceived loss, it triggers this deep sadness, and if it's a perceived injustice, it triggers this great stubbornness, you know, like this, well, I'm going to do this, and what happens, and actually I can see it all through my life, is I will, if I'm completely identified, I will make the most drastic changes to my life, like leave my marriage, or, you know, like that have dire consequences, and and I really don't want to leave my marriage. It's just like if I'm that, it gets that stubborn, you know? So recently there was this family crisis thing going on, and part of it is it happens so that I can, sometimes it's just so I stand up for myself or so that I can gear up enough to be heard or to, you know, to say something. But anyway, what I saw about that part of it, which I haven't really been that identified in a long time until that family thing happened recently, is that it's actually the same process, but a more severe part of it. So I hope I'm making sense. So in the process of doing and achieving and succeeding, there's always a step where I might not have done it very well, so I have to gear up to try harder. And it's that same stubbornness where I'm going to gear up to try harder and then just work, and then, you know, it either works out or it doesn't. I succeed or fail. It's just that it's kind of more minor in the big picture process. It's usually just a minor, well, that didn't work. Well, I'm going to try harder doing this thing. But it's that same stubbornness. Does that make sense?
And I thought I think it does. If let me reflect a little and see if I'm tracking. So you're doing something, and the part that you didn't emphasize that I want to ask you about is you get information that something didn't go the way you would like. Either there's an injustice or you didn't do well, or there's some kind of a loss, but all of those sort of go together. You get information that something happened that results in that kind of conclusion, and then that triggers the, well, then I'm going to, and you're off and running.
Yeah.
Is that the progression?
Yes, that's the progression. And before that, when I'm off, before that stubbornness and off and running, if I stay identified, I can see a sense of, like, the I in quotes not getting what it wants.
Well, and when I was looking at that progression, the part that was most interesting to me is how you get set up. That you're actually given information on one of those topics or one of those conclusions that will set you off.
Yes. Definitely.
Yeah.
So with
the family crisis, of course, I don't know what happened, but if we took that kind of thing, then something happened, and you were told whatever, and your reaction is that defensive slash aggressive, well, then, and that's when you're going to stand up and kind of take charge and make it happen, or however that gets framed. You're gonna stand
yes.
up for, stick up for yourself, be heard.
But if I could use the word Janice used, it gets a little fuzzy there for me, because there's
uh-huh.
actually two separate instances, and one, and it's related to my mother-in-law moving here, and it causes a great deal of sometimes tension. Or my husband and I have never fought before, but for whatever reason, with this topic, we can both be identified at the same time. And
mm-hmm.
so I was clear that I was identified, but I wasn't going to be able to keep myself from packing my bags and leaving, but for the fact that my family was coming to see me. But as far as the mother-in-law incident, I think that was going on for me, but I was not identified with it. It's like that was going on in the background, but I really needed to say, I needed something to be clearly said to my mother-in-law. So
uh-huh.
so the fuzziness is, but I never, you know, I never know I'm identified until later. I don't know until later that I was. I don't know how to explain that. Sometimes I think I'm not I was.
Yeah, just about everybody has that experience. Because, and this is a really, really, really awareness practice important point, right? That what happens to people is we get identified with something and there's nothing left over to point it out. So I just am the defensive person. I just am the angry person. Or I just am the... what is the word where, you know, offended, the injured party, right? And I'm just that completely. It's not like I'm me, whoever I am the rest of the time, and I'm feeling that. I become that.
Yeah.
And so it's only when I step out of that and become somebody else that I can see, oh, that injured party was there, or the angry person was there. Wow, I was identified. Now, we don't then take the next step, which is, huh, I was identified then, and I didn't know it. Am I identified now, and I don't know it?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because wherever we are, we're getting information that this is the real me, and this is how I really feel. And it's not. It's a con.
Yeah, and I think what you said just pointed out, because I felt like I was, I felt like I was, you know, that thing, but I could also, I also could see where I was in the process and see that I was identified.
Uh-huh.
But maybe
uh-huh.
that's the point of identification that I haven't looked at. The point of,
uh-huh.
like I'm identified watching the identified person, you know?
Yes, well, that is the most helpful place in practice. When we are identified and aware of the identification. So instead of being the identified, it's as if awareness, which I now experience myself to be, is very close to that identified person. So it's possible, so say, you know, say I've gotten really, my feelings hurt over something. Okay.
Yeah.
And that person is really upset and sad and, you know, all of the things that go with having your feelings hurt.
Yeah.
And before, I would have just become that. And I'd be crying or accusing people or doing whatever it is that I'm doing because my feelings are hurt. But now, because I've been practicing awareness or the grace of God or whatever happens, I'm actually in awareness as that way of being is acting out.
Yeah.
And so I feel great sympathy for that person. It's not, I haven't moved into a place of judgment. I'm not, you know, I'm not in egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate and thinking, God, what a, you know, what a crybaby, grow up or whatever it is. It's not that. It's,
yeah.
I'm in awareness, and so there's actual compassion and understanding for how that person feels. But I know I'm not that person.
Yeah, and I was recording and listening too, and you know, looking at all the pieces and everything. So, but yeah, it was like what you just explained.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a huge place in practice. When we get to that point, that's one of the first true experiences we have, that I am not ego. Ego is not me. There are these ego identifications that are not the awareness that is the authentic nature of this human being. So now I can begin to see all these behaviors, all these conditioned behaviors and identifications. And I get a sense that any time I'm in one of these kind of extreme states, I can know that I am in one of those ego identities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
It's huge,
exactly.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. I had that like 8 years ago when I saw this process and how it had affected my life, you know, it made these big life changes, it kind of like being identified like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that particular really strong process had gotten to the point where if it was about to happen, I would see it and it would just kind of vanish. It would just kind of like I would, in a nanosecond, yeah, see all the steps and it would just kind of break away. And it, mm-hmm, but for, and you know, I guess I thought I was done with it. For whatever reason, it's kind of, it just, I don't know, it's happened 4 or 5 times in the last 2 months to me, so I guess not.
Yes, and you've seen it.
Yes,
right?
Oh, yeah.
Which is, yeah. And so that's actually a more helpful place in practice than having it disappear. You know, the voices would tell us that, oh, the really good thing is you just turn your attention to it and it explodes. But what you're doing is seeing through it as a process. And that is what's really helpful. So now you're watching. You can see how upset she is over the mother-in-law thing, and there's this desire to just, you know, pack her bags and throw it all in and take her marbles and go somewhere else, right? And you can see all of that being acted out. And you're aware of the feelings and the thoughts and everything about it, and you know you're not going to do it. You know you're not going to act on it.
Yeah, no, yeah, thank you for that part. Like, because that is a difference. I got to like feel and experience all of it and have empathy for, it's really just someone that wants to protect her family, basically. I mean, just,
yes,
like the emotions that would, the you know, fight to the death kind of thing that would come up for that.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And
but
so you sympathize with her. There's no reason to judge her or condemn her or be harsh with her or let her act out. Right, you just can sympathize with her and have compassion for her, but you, as the disidentified awareness, you are going to make the decisions about behaviors.
Yeah, and I guess I was still getting beat up a little bit about certain things, which that turned out great, actually turned out great, and everybody wants to communicate better from now on and all that. But conditioning was telling me I just got lucky with that one. You know, like,
yeah, well, I'm sure it would.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, of course it would.
Like it,
of course it?
It
would. Because otherwise you're liable to keep doing it, and then everything is going to go really well, and conditioning is going to be unhappy. So, yeah, you can just say, uh-huh, whatever.
Yeah.
That's a whatever moment. Yeah.
And just, I don't know if this is right, but somehow it was just so relieving for me to see that as part of the whole process that I've always seen, just more extreme than when I just say, oh, that didn't work well, I'm just going to try harder. I don't know, it just, that was like a new awareness for me. Not that it's important.
Yes.
I don't, it was just...
Well, it is important,
like, oh,
because that, I'm just...
It's just more extreme.
Yes, yes, and... And hopefully it forever changes your relationship with, I'm just going to try harder. Because you know that that's a real signal of identification.
Yeah, because it doesn't seem so detrimental when, but it really is detrimental to my health if I just keep.
Goodness gracious, yes, absolutely. So, mm-hmm.
Well, I think I've taken up a lot of time, but so thank you so much.
Well, it's good. It's very fun. Thank you.
Get that out of my head.
Thank you. Appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you.
Right. Thanks, Janice.
Okay, thanks, Michael.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us, Janice. And Sherry, we're going to hear from our sponsor, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful heart?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart. And one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air, and we have another caller here, Sherry.
All right, good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Yeah, hi, this is Mary Jane in Palo Alto.
Hey, Mary Jane.
Hi. I guess I just... I just got the itch to call in, and so I thought I'd call in, and I don't know quite what I'm going to talk about.
Okay. It
sounds like you've got company.
Yeah, Evie's with me here. She's 2.5 now, so.
Wow. It's amazing, huh?
Yeah, it's incredible, yeah. The things that I'm in the midst of right now is really looking at, because we're looking at maybe fixing up our house, but I've been looking at this question of, like, because I feel like I need a lot of physical space, like I need to be alone or I need to be in a separate room to feel relaxed. And I've just kind of been curious about, like, how there's a bit of a setup to not feel spacious or feel, you know, like you don't have to have a huge house to feel spaciousness, I guess. Not that it would be huge, but like a separate room or so. That's one thing I'm kind of in the midst of right now is how to feel more spacious every day. Because I think ego-centered karmic conditioning for me, the way I experience it is like a pressure valve. Like it's like physical pressure on my body almost.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, that's really interesting because I was going to ask you about energy.
Mm.
Because that's what I was hearing in what you were saying, that you don't relax when you're in other energy.
Yes,
energy.
Yes.
Yeah, and when you go in another room and you close the door, then you're not feeling, you're not sensitive to, aware of other people's energy, and you can relax, your system can relax.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, okay, good.
But it's hard to live that way. It's hard to live
yes,
that way.
Yes, we haven't solved any problems. But I think that the thing that is good about realizing something like that and identifying what's going on is that now you can bring conscious awareness to it. So, for instance, you can begin to practice actively relaxing when you're in other people's energy. You can watch where your body tenses and tightens. One of the things that I encourage people with is, as we do awareness practice, karmic conditioning has us ego wants our attention to be in our eyes. Our attention goes, we look outside at the world, and then we quickly turn the attention inward to conditioned mind. Then we turn the attention out and check and make sure everything is going the way we want to go out there. Then we bring it back, and it lives in conditioned mind. That's kind of the route that attention is on. And as we practice awareness more, we begin practicing dropping attention down into all the... what's called the hara, or the tension down the navel, and letting attention reside there. And as we practice with that, we begin to realize that we're actually taking in information, responding to energy in all places in our body that we don't notice because attention is so habitually committed to conditioned mind.
Yes.
You with me on that? Yeah.
Yeah.
So now you can watch when, you know, there you are in the kitchen and somebody comes into the room. Instead of just going to a conversation about, oh, it would be so wonderful to have a few minutes of peace and quiet and time to myself, which is how conditioning maintains itself, right? You can just notice. Oh, where in my body do I feel that person coming into the room?
Okay. Well, yeah, because it can be other people, or it can also be other people's expectations, right? So if I'm in a project and the other people maybe are dissatisfied, you know, it doesn't have to be always just present. It could even be, you know, you could evoke it when you're thinking about it, too. That energy coming into your space,
Yes, and in the same way, you can see where you feel it.
Yes, okay.
Yeah, so now if we're going to do a whole energy thing for you, because, I mean, this will be cheaper than remodeling the house, and it could, in theory, be quicker than remodeling the house, you know, less intrusive. But what you can start to feel, there's a thing, the chakra system, which I'm sure you're aware of.
Yeah.
And one of the things that people who tune into that, I being one of them, are aware of is where various people cord you. Okay? So there are people when you're around them and that you feel their energy in your second chakra, right? It's kind of an emotional sort of a thing. Or you feel it in your third chakra where it feels like they want you to do something.
Mm.
Or in your heart chakra where you're meant to have a certain kind of reaction to them. Where you're called upon to bring compassion to the situation. Or maybe you feel it in your fifth chakra where you're meant to say something to or whatever with them.
Mm.
And so to just play with where do you feel it? Like with your daughter, when she interacts with you, where do you feel her energy courting you? Does she know how to get a sympathetic reaction? Where does she cord you when she wants a sympathetic reaction?
Yeah, in the heart chakra.
Yeah. Where does she cord you when she wants her own way? Right? Where does she...
It feels like in the throat chakra, but...
uh-huh. Yeah. So playing with these kinds of things can be illuminating and enlightening, and they can also begin to move us out of that incessant, repetitive conversation about content.
Yes. Okay, so if I get you to just try to notice, stop thinking about like this person or that person, but just notice energetically where am I feeling it in my body and bring compassionate awareness to that as a starting place to the whole process.
Yeah. To the whole process. So what you're doing, you're on a fact-finding mission, because what people will get into is, there's this person in my life and I can't get rid of them. That every time they come around, I just am irritable. I just wish I could. I wish they would go away and leave me alone. And that conversation will just get on a loop, right? Mm. And it's not going anywhere, and it's not helping anything, and it's not even accurate, because I don't know why I'm so irritable. I don't know what it is about that person. Right? What have I got? It's all an opportunity to bring awareness, but conditioned mind wants us stuck, not aware.
Mm.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, this is great. And I'm in the class with you, the Socratic Method, and I'm doing this, part of this is my theme for the class, so we can continue on the
very good. All right. Excellent. We will continue to explore. All right. Thank you, Mary Jane.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Mary Jane. And Sherry, I think we have time for at least one more caller here.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. This is Carolyn from Seattle.
Hi.
Well, hello, Carolyn. How are you doing?
I am very excited. I'm all lit up.
Good, good. That's a fun way to live.
It just makes everything so much more palatable and tolerable. It's been my experience. Is lit it upness my constant companion? No. But I guess that's why we call it a practice. And I get to
that's
practice.
That's exactly right.
That's exactly right. Oh, wow. I am calling in fulfillment of my commitment with my Zen awareness coach to get in the queue and see what happens. And so I'm here I am.
All right.
Gosh, I've just been so engrossed in the previous conversations, which is lovely because it gets me out of my own, head and my own conversation. But I think one of the things that I could maybe bring to this and look for guidance on is being with others who have, where egocentric karma conditioning self-hate has them, to use our terminology, so incredibly bamboozled that they are unable to acknowledge their participation in their own suffering.
Mm.
And to be alongside those people with compassion and without judgment and not get sucked into my kind of inclination sometimes towards wanting to kick them in the ass, basically.
I thought you were going towards, get pulled into their story and get, oh, no.
No. I do have those moments when I'm a little more civilized about it. I've never actually physically done that to anyone, but I want to tell you, sometimes the inclination is to just shake them, and so I feel so blessed to be connected to this sangha of people that are waking up, to end suffering in this lifetime. That is our, that's what we wake up every morning, and we say that prayer, and we hold ourselves through the day to practice awareness and coming back to now and being here.
So,
and I don't know if this is a question or a comment or just a venting kind of frustrating situation.
I think what you're pointing at is a real struggle for all of us who practice. And I was actually looking at that in a conversation with another group of people earlier today, where I had been talking with someone. And I hit that with them, that kind of the place that you're talking about, where they're just in their suffering, in their stuff, and not open to another possibility. And I watched this just rush of energy up through me. At another time, I would have said I was angry, but what I realized is I was sad.
Yeah.
It just made me so sad to see somebody have an opportunity, have a possibility, and not be in a place to choose it.
Yeah.
And so when I got to that place of, it just makes me incredibly sad, then I could be with that, and I could be with an awareness of most of my life when I was in exactly the same place. And that fortunately, at every juncture, there was somebody there, at least one somebody, who kept holding out that possibility to me. And that's not the same as people stayed around stage stuck with me and my stuff. I'm not saying that. But there were people who had enough compassion to let me see that there were other choices available to me. I don't know if that's helpful. But when I remember my own unconsciousness, I think about my own unconsciousness and I think, ooh, okay, all right, I know what that's like.
And moving, experiencing that sadness in the presence of deep suffering, and then recognizing and having such deep gratitude that through, conscious, compassionate awareness, I don't have to live there.
That's right.
24/7.
That's exactly right.
I am sharpening my toolkit to, my little machete to whack down, this incessant, this thing that is rooted in me and, from what I understand, most of us, long before I had any choices about it. And to always have,
I think this one particular friend that I'm thinking about right now, just to always communicate to her that when she's ready, when she wants to explore that, maybe there are some other options in this life, I'm always here.
Yeah.
I'm a phone call away, I'm a text away, and I'm not going anywhere.
Right.
I'm in this for the long haul.
Yeah, and for me, it's finding that balance between great sympathy for human suffering and the ability to laugh at egocentric karmic conditioning wherever we see it.
So
being able to separate those two, that we see that's so much the source of suffering for people is that they really believe what karmic conditioning and what ego is doing to them is real and true.
And this is who I am.
And so always, Yeah, and so to keep a sense of lightness about that while never losing sight of compassion for the stuck human.
Yes, yes, yes. So, yes, you know, I think sometimes the voices will say, you know, you are just so, you just think you know what's right for another person. You don't know anything. And most of the time, you don't really even know what's right for you, by the way, in case you were confused about that. You know, and you can really take that and really run with it. And it's like, wait a minute, stop. No, no. I am learning one day at a time to not.
And that's right. And I know I don't know. Manner.
Yeah. I don't know, never have known. And, you know, so what else is new? You know, tell me something that's true.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then you find out it doesn't know anything that's true. And then that's when we are grateful for our sense of humor.
That's right. That's right. And I remember reading in one of, I think it was in the cards or somewhere in the card book or one of those many things that you all have written about, that, you know, one of the number one or top 10, I don't know how you all worded it, but that cultivating a sense of humor is essential.
Ooh. Yeah.
And, you know,
a sense of humor.
Sense of humor. And,
don't leave home without it.
So seriously. You know?
Yeah.
Lighten up.
Oh, yeah. Yes, exactly.
Lighten up.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a comedy act.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. Mm-hmm. It really is. And it's just great having you all here up here in Seattle. It was just so cool to just be with Sangha in that way. Because, you know, this virtual Sangha thing is, you know, a very new concept for a girl like me, and it's just lovely to be in the physical presence of kindred spirits. So please come back anytime.
All right, thank you. And, you know, that reminds me that I actually was talking to Ashwini about this afterwards, that one of my big campaigns this year is going to be saying to people, come on retreat. All this virtual stuff is great, but come on retreat because there's just nothing like it. We just got to be together. Mm-hmm.
Well, all right. I'll see you all in July. I'm planning on coming down there for the July retreat, and just deeply blessed and grateful that I can make that commitment. So, thank you so much, Sherry and Michael.
I'm very pleased. Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Carolyn. What a great way to end the show, Sherry. It's wonderful.
Yeah. Yes, love it. Lit up stuff.
Yes, lit
Michael,
up.
Michael, I didn't ask you, are you a little under the weather? You sound very, like, maybe something like that.
I'm a little under the weather, yeah. I'm trying to think I'm fighting something off, and sometimes it just shows up just in my throat, so I'm going to take care of
the deeper voice. Yeah, get that Huber Cure going. Take care of yourself, huh?
Yeah. I'll do my best.
Good Lord willing, talk to you next week.
Okay. Great.
All right. Thanks, Michael. Good night.
Thank you. Good night.